Sex work is an umbrella term for erotic labor that can include anyone in the intersections of sexuality and labor, be it cam performers, full service, street-based performers, DOMs, educators sometimes qualify. But the bigger question is, it is liberatory labor that is challenging our right to own and possess our own bodies and our own access to expression and identity through sexuality and labor.
Welcome into the expansive world of cis society, a space where taboos dissolve, shadows become allies, and sensuality, intimacy, and sexuality are celebrated as gateways to truth. This is Taboo Talks, a podcast where no topic is off limits, and everything is held with courage, compassion, and curiosity. Together, let's shatter the limits of what we've been taught to fear and transform it into the power to live fully, freely, and authentically. Hello, beautiful people. Welcome back to Taboo Talks. We are honored to have you here today and always. We are joined by the incredible Soleil Miroir, who is a licensed clinical social worker, ASECT certified sex therapist and group facilitator, sex worker, and co-founder of the Equitable Care Certification. Welcome to the show, Soleil. We're really excited to have you.
So glad to be here.
Yay! We met at ASECT in Vegas and it was amazing. And as soon as I met you, I felt such a strong connection to just your aura, your essence, what you're building in this world. It's all very, you are very inspiring. So I just want to preface this whole chat with a deep gratitude and a thank you. And yeah, I also just want to dive right up in there. And you are a sex worker and a therapist. And I'm just curious what led you to that crossroad. What's the backstory that brought you to that point in your life of merging those two?
Yeah. I mean, the opening question you had me ask to answer today around what is sex work is I couldn't do in 15 seconds because it is this like such a huge part of identity and life and being and culture. And for me, like I've been doing erotic labor and exchange since I was a child. And I think most folks of femme backgrounds have had their relationship with people trying to exploit, to use, to consume their bodies and their identities and their skills and their emotions in many ways, whether it's as a therapist or a healer in your family, or being sexualized by relatives, by family, by the world. And so, like me being in the body and in the person that I was, I've always experienced sexualization in a way that I was like, well, fuck, I can't make money doing, I'm not very good at a lot of the like academic things, but like I have this access to this thing that I'm really good at that is just, inherent in my being that I can relate to erotic labor and erotic expression with ease. And so, for pretty much since I was in doing any kind of labor, I was doing sexual labor. I was doing social work at the same time as I was doing full service. I was doing therapy at the same time I was camming. I've always been doing sort of this bridge between these various parts of myself. And it's only maybe the last 5 years that I've worked really hard to merge them and be really out and be really open about lots of clinical people are also doing erotic labor, and we can still have good ethics, boundaries, and limits around it. And what does it look like to be a person, at that intersection? Especially when, in the context of sex work, agoraphobia is so deeply entrenched sociologically in America and most places, that the hatred of those who do sex work meant it had to stay so subverted and secret and so like a piece of shame within me for so long. So that was a long way to say I grew up in a really abusive family in a really fundamentalist Christian church, a lot of like oppression and subjugation of my sexuality. And in my liberation of my own well-being, my own sexual self, it also meant liberating myself in terms of erotic labor and opening that as a possibility for my own well-being, but also for engagement in capitalism. And it's not going to be liberating for everybody. Lots of people are in sex work for survival reasons. It was a survival reason for me early on, and now it's a choice. And we all get to kind of move along that spectrum of circumstance, choice, survival.
Thank you for sharing. Was there a specific turning point for you where you felt like choice came in and you were like, "Hey, I want to like consciously claim this and like stand on this as a stage of my power," and like really like potentially to take the path of therapy as well too and integrate that? Like, was there a specific thing that happened or occurred that, or was it just kind of this like natural kind of slow easing in?
Totally. Yeah, well, I mean, I've been doing, clinical social work therapy kind of stuff for so long, and always had, again, the sex work piece was subverted. And at some point I really realized I was started doing my sex worker advocacy, leading sex worker support groups. And what I noticed in doing that work is I had a lot of internalized horophobia within me. Because, I very much had this like, well, as long as I only see these kinds of clients, as long as I'm not doing street based, as long as I'm, keeping these parts of my life separate, I can just kind of like, oh, I'm just having some fun. I'm just making some extra money. Like I was noticing within myself that I was afraid to be doing any of the sex work that was more risky or dangerous that most people that are in survival sex work have to be doing. Like full service street based sex work is infinitely more dangerous than any other kind of sex work and infinitely more marginalized and stigmatized. And yet, though they were still my community, they were people I was connecting with. And I was like, wait, I can't be a sex work accomplice. I can't be in community with you, be doing good care for you as a provider, be it a therapist or just a person in community, if I don't actually unpack my own relationship to horophobia and my own internalized shit around like, we've all had those like pretty woman fantasies at various times where you're like, I was kind of on the path for a lot of like kind of bougie, sugary sex work, which isn't actually a lot of what sex work is. And it doesn't really give people a sense of what it's like to experience horophobia and marginalization around it. So for me, I just didn't think I could do the work well unless I really brought my identities into reality and unpacked that internalized shit. So in doing my and while I was starting the Equitable Care certification, I brought together a group of 50 or more volunteers of therapists and sex workers and community members, and we just started meeting and talking about it and doing this thing. And in the process of that, we had a lot of really cool accountability happening of like people being like, hey, white people, you don't get it. Hey, you're causing harm. Hey, this isn't working. Like this need we need to do this differently if we're actually going to do this thing well. And so I'm really grateful for my engagement in that project as a way to like both unpack my internalized shit, but also realize that I had to be really clear in my therapy identity does not give me class, privilege, access, or power over someone, even though societally it does. So, like, how do I, dismantle a power dynamic that is causing harm to people, especially my community of sex workers, who I am very aligned with, at this point in my life now?
Wow,
Thank you.
this really speaks to me, what everything you're sharing. And growing, I grew up in a really like Christian household, very oppressive, very judgmental. It's really interesting because in my coaching work right now, I just integrated this holy whore archetype, like this piece of me that I realized I've been suppressing and like fighting against, even though I also do forms of sex work. There's like a piece of me that also like judges it and judges other forms of sex work. And so it's really interesting to have this like inner duality and then like this piece of me that's a coach, like a sex coach, relationship coach. So I really just resonate with what you're saying. And I'm so curious, like, how are you able to kind of stop that inner war? And how are you able to really integrate all of you so that you could really be in your full integrity to be in this intersection service?
I would say, every day it's still an ongoing journey. Like it's not a thing that just goes away. I mean, I'm in a personal share. I'm in a really conflictual relationship situation with my child's father and currently like purging that energy from my daily life. And a lot of times, like when he's mad, he says horophobic things to me. And it brings up this interesting like thing in my body where I'm like, oh, I forgot. Like the most sensitive parts of me is when someone says like sex shaming things or horophobic things. Cause I fought so hard to like liberate my own relationship to like erotic labor being okay, to like my sexual self being okay. Like I was a slut way before I was a whore. And like my slut identity is so strong. Like I'm gonna fuck whoever I want, whenever I want, with respect and care and kindness and love. But like I'm a very like erotic human, very connected to my like I love Audre Lorde's like use of the erotic. I'm very connected to like the creativity and life force and power that comes from my erotic self. And so like having somebody in my direct life that knows me really well to then like say horophobic things like brings up this like this constant work that I'm still doing around like, man, like do I feel shame and fear that I need to subvert this thing? Especially, I live in another country. I live in Mexico and like sex work is very dangerous and different here. And so there's not the same kind of like cultural acceptance of really any of it in this context. And so I'm back up against this kind of like wall right now around like, do I get to exist as this person? And how many other people are fighting, you know, I still lead sex worker support groups every a few times a month. And like sex workers will come to the support groups and say, like, I'm worried I lost my housing. I'm worried about, you know, being assaulted every day. You know, I'm on the street, like worried about, you know, can I insist on condoms today because I need to eat? And so I don't get to have the privileges of having communicating my needs and boundaries. And something that the constant work within myself to unpack it is that like connection with my community, my role in promoting them and supporting folks who are in more marginalized positions. And the fact that I do have this fallback, I can still always do therapy. And so that I don't have dependency on sex work in the same way that others do. So it allows me to still be reinforcing some of the horophobic shit. And so I have to like be really aware, call it out, and notice like what's it like to dismantle power in every interaction I have with somebody, to like acknowledge where the power exists, whether it's race or gender or class or status or academic. And what does it mean to like acknowledge that that's not fucking real for this person? This person actually just wants me to be a human in relationship with them, no matter what role I'm playing. How do I do that? Especially sitting with another sex worker. Like, I don't know what it's like to be worried I'm going to be murdered on the street tonight. Like, that's not a thing I've ever experienced in order to go to work. You know, how do we help everybody who does erotic labor? That we run into this problem a lot with like tantra folks and sex coach folks and like high-end, you know, doms, like, oh, well, I don't touch people. Well, I'm not like that. I don't, you know, I don't have they just like they reinforce the hierarchy is the term for this like artificial hierarchy in the industry that just causes more harm, because the more distancing we do from those who are the most marginalized, the more they're going to be harmed because we're enforcing that their work, their lives, their identities aren't valuable because we get to separate ourselves from it. We get to be in this privileged place. And I don't want to live in a world where any sex worker is being harmed. I don't want to live in a world. I don't want to do this work if my benefiting from a high-end sex work role is reinforcing oppression to those who people think they can dehumanize because of their race or gender, or they can dehumanize because of the kind of work they do, or their class or status.
Yeah, this is so interesting. Like what I just the theme I'm hearing is like the separation of self is also like the problem is like the sep when we separate each other, especially in the groups of we're all sex workers. Why are we separating ourselves even more when we need to really be coming together? And so the more we integrate within, the more we can integrate around us. And this is, you said so many things, so many juicy things, and I want to continue to keep going into that with you, but we're going to just take a quick break from our affiliates and we'll be right back to continue this discussion.
Listen up. I have to let you in on the most revolutionary pleasure program I've ever experienced. I'm completely obsessed. The Vita Coaching Certification is one of the most advanced trainings on the planet for sex, love, and relationship coaches, and it's completely transformed my life. It's not just a coaching program, it's a dream erotic education, fusing tantra, neuroscience, IFS, and somatics, full of embodied, juicy pleasure practices. I've shed layers of sexual trauma, religious shame, and toxic patterns. My nervous system is regulating. My pleasure is awakening, and my relationships are thriving. I feel more alive than ever. You become the embodied transmission, walking the path you'll guide your clients through. Plus, the business training sets you up for success. I already have my first client, and I'm only halfway through. The support is unmatched. The sisterhood is global. And even though it's online, it feels deeply personal. So if you feel the call to transform your life and rise as a coach that this world desperately needs, click the link and say yes.
All right. Well, welcome back. We're here with Taboo Talks episode with Soleil.
Yay.
And yeah, we're exploring sex work and advocacy for its people and the intersection of therapy. This is just such an interesting conversation so far. So I wanted to pick up where we left off and kind of ask you a little bit more about how a therapist such as yourself, who really specializes with helping other sex workers thrive, what would you say and how would you advocate for sex workers to remain safe and to be successful and protected in the work that they do?
Yeah, thanks for asking that. One of the biggest challenges is that, sex workers often don't go to therapy and avoid it because therapists are so shitty to them. As we just talked about, whorephobia is so deeply entrenched in every industry. Like I hear whorephobic comments in every therapist training that I do, because people just don't know. Like there's, don't know language, don't know how to care for them. And so if a sex worker finally comes to you and says, I'm working a job that is dangerous, that, they're experiencing assault, they're experiencing fear of police violence, they're having housing instability. I really recommend, two main responses from a therapist. One is, support them with their basic well-being the same way you would any client. Like, what do we need to do to help you get housing, help you get food, help you build more community, help you get more access to having your needs met? Because social support is so limited that a lot of people are doing survival sex work and also still really under-resourced because we don't have a very comprehensive social support systems in most areas. So first is that, help with their basic needs. And then second is, do not suggest they leave the work as the first response. And the most common response of a therapist is, "Oh yeah, this work is harming you. Well, let's find your way out of it." Oftentimes they are doing that work because it is the best thing for them and or it is their only option. So your insistence on, "Well, the work is the problem, you should just leave," comes from a very privileged and classist place, because it means that you don't really understand how or why they got to that work and what are the factors that impacted that. And obviously, if somebody had other options, they would be doing other options sometimes, especially if they're, fearing for safety. So it basically just shuts down the conversation and shuts down any support they want to be receiving. So instead, you're really just humanizing the person. Okay, what do you need today? Okay, let's figure this out. We need a housing for tonight. Okay, we need a community that you can go to, for condoms. Okay, let's, what how do you do use a harm reduction mindset and a person-centered mindset? What do they actually want from you? What are they actually there for? Are they there for just emotional support, to be heard, to be understood, to be seen? Are they wanting to deal with some past traumas? Sometimes it's not about the work at all. That's just, a thing that's a part of their life. But that's not the reason they're seeing you.
Thank you so much for sharing that. Yeah, I feel like as a therapist, rather than like assuming what they need, just getting curious and saying like, "What do you need?" feels like the most humane thing to do. And speaking of assuming, I don't know where sex worker advocacy is right now, like in the United States, for example. Are you able to just share like where we are legally? Where are we headed? What do we need to know just about the landscape? I imagine people listening, some might be sex workers, some might not be, and some may have no idea what's going on in the world. And I believe providing more information around it can really rally some people to support and get behind this issue.
Totally. And I think, I would say, the most important thing is if you're a provider and doing anything related to folks that are in sex work fields, your job has to be also doing advocacy and activism work. Like you can't be a like neutral person in that because there is so much harm happening because of systemic factors. So in addition to like supporting a client from a person-centered perspective, you're also just, okay, how do we dismantle these systems that are the cause of the harm? Like the work is not the problem. It's, the stigma, the shame, the fear, the whorephobia, the violence, it's the way that people treat sex workers that is the problem, not the work. And so some of it's, we're currently in America moving to a much more conservative place, and sex workers are the primary target. Like, if folks are watching this right now, like, you have to be engaging in political action around stopping legislation around that's anti-sex work, stopping. Criminalization of just basic existence, which disproportionately targets Black trans folks. And there's not any good laws in America really around sex work. There's two counties in America that have a more decriminalized model. Most of America does not. Most of America still is highly penalizing of sex work and highly horophobic, meaning they lose jobs, they lose families, they lose children. They lose access to legal rights. They're still considered, NHI is still a term used in legal records, which means no human involved. A case of the sex worker is labeled as that and thrown away. Like they're not given access
What?
to rights. Yeah. Look up NHI cases. There's like, it's a legal term, a policing term. They don't believe that both houseless people and sex workers and mentally ill folks are put into this category of it's not worth our time
No
legally.
human involved, like as in like you're not a human and you don't deserve to be treated
Okay.
like one.
The
Oh,
case.
that really makes me super angry.
Yeah. And but that, and it's so deeply entrenched in our legal system that it's like, oh, we don't need to do anything about sex work stuff because they don't matter. They're not considered human.
Oh.
And so, what we're seeing right now, the age verification laws is a really big thing to like watch. All the age verification laws are causing harm and are bad for sex workers and bad for humans, because they're censoring. That's not just the goal is not just keeping kids from watching porn. What it actually is doing is shutting down free speech, shutting down access to education, shutting down access to communication, to marketing, to support, to community, to well-being, shutting down just basic art and community around sexuality. So, it's a really, as our political system is moving more conservative, we see more sex workers having to go more underground. The same thing happened with FOSTA SESTA. It increased actually harm to sex workers. It increased traffic. It increased that these lo bad laws increase the stigma and the shame and the fear that sex workers experience. And it's not getting better right now. So if anything, my recommendation to sex workers who might be listening is find your communities and go more underground. Do find off the grid communication systems, find, use VPNs, use end-to-end encryption. Like, don't do anything public. Don't do anything. If you can get away from it, doing anything that is can be tracked, because right now they're using face recognition software, they're blocking people at the border. It is a dangerous time for sex work, specifically in America. And but again, not for those who do kind of bougie sex work. So again, this is a great example of how horophobia is and horarchy really impacts folks who do labor that is going to be a lot more, visual. If, for example, if you're doing online work, or if you're doing, street-based work where they're doing sweeps at massage parlors, the ICE teams are going to places where sex workers work and using ICE as a way to to basically arrest sex workers. It's using it as a tool to basically like wipe out sex working communities.
This is so preposterous. So, I mean, sex work is one of the oldest professions on the planet. And you spoke about stigma. And I'm just curious, like, with it being one of the oldest, most ancient forms of exchange and making money, why are we here right now? Like, why is this still so stigmatized? What is your belief on that? Like, what the fuck? Honestly.
This is a simple answer, because we are so deeply still entrenched in patriarchy and colonization that someone owning their own labor, a woman, a femme, a non-binary person, a trans person, owning their means of labor and making money on it and controlling it is a threat to patriarchal systems, because the more empowered we are in our labor, in our pleasure, in our expression, in our identities, in community, the more we are not feeding into their systems of breeding, of dating, of marrying, of working, of supporting their children, of buying all their shit. It is all interrelated, and sex workers are always the they're the symbol of the liberation that the patriarchy is so fucking terrified of.
Yeah, there's nothing more powerful than especially a woman in her pleasure who's supporting herself, who's not buying into the mainstream narrative, right? So, yeah, I'm curious
Men
to
have to pay to get
hear.
access to.
Oh.
Sorry.
I'm just like, oh man, this could go in so many different directions, but I'm really curious, like, how you are able to bring these two worlds, like how you've been able to bring these two worlds together, and like what have you learned from the sex work that you do that you bring into your therapy, and what have you learned from your therapy that you bring into your sex work, and how do you kind of like dance with these two now in integration?
Yeah, I mean, at my sex worker support groups, one time I asked the question of what is your sex work self, like a part of your sex work self that you really love, that really has like nourished you. And this was a group of like 20 people this day, and we had such beautiful fucking responses that I was like, we were all crying, because this group of sex workers just could say like, I am more confident in my boundaries, I'm more powerful in my pleasure, I know who I am, I know I'm good at, demanding I'm worth money. I like all of these like really beautiful, creative, better at marketing, better at finances, like all of these beautiful human traits that we don't see sex work as the place that people would learn them and develop them, but it's actually a really great space for that. And sex work draws a lot of different kinds of people, especially folks that are more neurodivergent, especially folks with disabilities, trans folks, because it is a place that everyone can kind of like make their own niche. We could do even more so without horophobia. But I think in terms of like the a lot of my best qualities were things I learned in sex work more than things I learned in therapy. And so I think a lot of there's like, again, this brings up like the classism and sort of the like elitism that comes with like, oh, I have this degree and I went to school. I learned fucking nothing in grad school. Like nothing. There was nothing useful I took away from grad school. I learned a lot, you know, in doing sex work.
Where not to spend your money, maybe, right? Like that's the
Right?
biggest lesson that I learned.
Totally. But I'm grateful I had the chance to go and I'm still paying off my fucking loans forever. But like, you know, but the skills that I actually needed to do good therapy, human skills, relational skills, I learned in community. And this is what, you know, Black and Brown folks have been telling white people this forever. Our like mental health systems, our psychological systems are deeply colonized. Like they were the founder of the APA was a eugenicist. How do you in create a system for assessing and understanding humans when you believe in eugenics? Like there's some deeply problematic foundations to the mental health field, to diagnostics. There was a post this week on Instagram that 60% of the people on the DSM committee, basically the group that decides what DSM diagnoses are and what the words mean, 60% were taking millions of dollars in funding from pharmaceutical companies. Millions of dollars. How
Wow,
can
so
you tell about
corrupt.
your diagnostic traits when they're literally getting funded to keep you sick, to make money, to feed a system of oppression? So like
Oh.
for me, like the therapy shit, I'm moving more and more away from like the mental health industry being a place that feels good for me as an anti-oppressive, a human fighting to do anti-oppressive work, because it continues to perpetuate, I need to keep you sick to make money. And like, it is a system of that is built on harm and built on like using that classism and elitism to distance from actually caring for humans and sending them back to community. I had this therapist once who told me that she was seeing a client for 10 years every week. And I was like, at
No.
what fucking point do you realize that's really unethical? Like, there's no reason you should be talking to somebody every week for 10 years and like it didn't get better. Like you never made progress. They never found another friend. I don't know. But like that's what it became. It was like I can make all this money off of these humans and their pain without really like changing the systems, changing the things that are making them unwell. Like therapists that aren't doing like action to change systems are just a part of a cog in a machine. Like I'm just gonna plug into the CBT machine. Maybe we do just need the robots to do that then, because that's not actually clinical work. That's just like feeding the system. Sorry, that was very random.
Yeah, it's very similar to like the way that Western medicine is and so many doctors in the clinics, right? It's like the same thing is going on with the mental health industry as the physical health industry, buying into these, you are this, this is who you are, this is what you need. And yeah, I just wonder how many people who are seeing their therapists are actually really receiving much change or are just in like a victimhood mentality of wanting to be validated in their story. And just continuing to go deeper and deeper into ruminating and connecting and attaching to their story. And I personally am a coach and I do like a lot of somatic work and trauma healing. And for me, it's like where, yeah, I feel like that work is really needed right now is to get out of the story and to actually break those chains that are like holding us back at like a deep, deep, deep level. So yeah, I'm curious like how you see yourself kind of re revolutionizing the way that you are using therapy and you are actually supporting people and making a change.
Yeah, I mean, so watch. We have a new course coming out in. This is a plug for ECC, the Equitable Care Certification. We are doing workshops in addition to our full 36-hour certification for treating sex workers, and our workshops are kind of just like random related topics. But we're doing a workshop on the disruptive therapist coming up. This is a thing that's in the works. But like, what does it
Cool.
mean to be like still being, you know, in the systems in some ways, but doing it in a way that is anti-oppressive and uncolonizing, you know, the systems and the places that we are working. And a lot of that looks like just treating people like fucking humans. Like I sometimes I'm shocked that I need to say this to therapists, because I do supervision and I do training, and oftentimes I'm sitting in a question a same a conversation with a therapist who's like, oh yeah, I need to do this form with 50 questions on it. You know, how do I do that in a way that is going to be, you know, going to go well for the client? And I was like, you don't. We don't ask somebody 50 questions about their trauma the first day you meet somebody and like think that's relationship building. Like you would never do that on a first date. You would never do that with a friend. Like why would we say in this system we get to then like objectify this person like they are like an experiment that we're like poking and prodding at its various points to be like, which one's gonna make you cry? Like I have so many clients that come to me after multiple therapists that are like just trauma dumping, that they basically just, you know, are asked to trauma dump day one. And then the therapist's like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm not a good fit. And like the therapist just was like trauma voyeuring, like, oh, this was like so intense. Like, I can't believe, like, what's the point? Why are we?
Why
And
are we still there? But these systems feel so outdated. I mean, even going to the doctors and just being asked that list of like medical questions, like when you don't even know the doctor's name, they're like, are you HIV positive? Like, are you sexually active? How many partners do you have? And I'm like, wait, where am I right now? Like, you are infiltrating such a vulnerable part of the system. And
exactly.
it's really just, it's broken, which is great that we're talking about it because that means it has to be disheveled and rebuilt again. It just has to be.
Yeah, 100%. And but you know, it's therapists that I think a lot of, like, I look at the new students coming in. Like, I, you know, I'll work with interns sometimes, and like a lot of people go to the work because they want to make money. Like, oh, this is a job. Like, we have to survive in capitalism. And so part of it, it starts with colonialism's a problem, and then capitalism's the problem, and patriarchy's a problem, and therapy is just this offshoot of this. Like, it is the dregs that are left at the end of the system that, like, people are doing this for labor, maybe similar to sex work, doing labor that they're not actually, like, really connected to doing a good job in and know how to do it in a way that, like, not everyone is meant to be doing transformational, like, supportive work with people, and not everyone has those skill sets and interests to, like, do that well. And it's not, you know, just like learn the 10 steps of CBT and you're a therapist, which is very much like what these schools teach. And like, and you know, it's a systemic problem in the university space because universities almost never will fail somebody. They'll almost never say you shouldn't be a therapist. Supervisors almost never say that to people. And I'm in conflict with somebody right now because I'm saying this to them and they don't know, they don't like it. But I'm like, this is literally the job, is to say, you know, as a supervisor, as somebody training people, like, I don't think this is a good fit for you. And people will harm clients that do when they do this work from different motivations, from different biases. I see this a lot with therapists who, like, actually have their own biases. And I have therapists tell me this. They're like, well, I'm very conservative, you know, politically leaning, but I can do good work with any client. I was like, no, you cannot. If you don't believe that I should have rights to have an abortion and have rights to, like, be my gender identity, like, you cannot do kind, caring, supportive work for me. But there's this belief that they can kind of separate. Oh, I put on my professional hat and now I just, like, spit out the CBT words. And like, no, it's a human, it's a relational system.
Yeah,
Yeah,
it's
I'm
like
curious,
you
like,
need to take responsibility as a professional. Like my teacher says, if there's a way of relating, if there's a way of sexual identity, if there's anything that triggers you and creates like a response of ugh, repulsion, she's like, go into that. Push yourself to experience new ways, like put yourself around new types of communities, new types of people. Watch content that makes you feel uncomfortable because if you have your own stigma, even if it's like, kind of repressed, like that's going to block you from actually showing up in your full capacity to hold space for the full spectrum of people and meeting them where they're at. Because true transformation and true healing, the first step is acceptance. If you can't accept it in yourself and you can't accept it in someone else, it's not going to change. And they're going to feel that from you. So I think for anyone that wants to do this type of therapy or this type of coaching or this type of transformative work, you have to really look at yourself and look at where am I still holding my own bias? Where am I still stigmatizing and fragmenting myself? And that's the work. Like, you can't just show up, get a degree. You have to do your own trauma work. You have to do your own limiting belief work. You have to look at yourself before you can really show up in integrity with others. All right, Heather, I know you were going to say something, but I just wanted to add that in there because I'm really passionate about that too. I think there's a lot of unethical healers out there that are just trying to make money and haven't really done their own work. Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of lack of compassion. Yeah, I was curious, Soleil, like how much, like I know with your schooling, your educational system, Elfina, like there's a lot of compassion woven into it, but in the traditional structure, Soleil, like is there a class in compassion? Is it like, is there a class in humanism and how to like, be with, like how does that certification process look like, and are there gaps in it?
In terms of, like, traditional, like, tr mental health training, I mean, yeah, every year university is going to be a little bit different and have its own shit. But, like, I'm sure you all have seen, like, all of the DEI has been taken out of every school. So imagine a therapy program without DEI, without, like, talk about anti-racism. Like, literally, colleges are being told they cannot do anti-racism work. Like, how are you going to teach people, especially a lot of people are white therapists, and so how do you actually do that work? I mean, I think a lot of it is the learning that you do outside of the universities. Like, I will not trust any program to do this well. But it's, you know, are you in community with different people? Are you doing your own anti-racist learning? Are you doing your own anti-horophobia learning? What does it mean to be unpacking your own biases is not, you watch a few Instagram reels and you're like, okay, yeah, I like trans people, but instead it's like, what does it actually mean? I can't tell you, like, every day I come across, like, yeah, homophobic comments, transphobic comments in therapist communities. So it's one of those things where, like, yeah, I don't trust schools to do it, but there's lots of good resources out there that do it. And I actually have an assessment, like a little like 5-question assessment that I wrote for folks to like for therapists to assess whether they're sex worker informed. So I'll give you all that link to share with this episode too.
Please. Yeah, I was just gonna say, we have people watching from all different levels of self-inquiry and like where they are in their in consciousness. And like in regards to you mentioned horophobia a lot and also just meeting the shadow and allowing that to be a catalyst for growth and evolution. Like, how do you suggest that somebody listening right now who maybe hasn't spent much time with their shadow, like go about addressing it? And sitting with it and starting to dissect it and understand it and maybe dismantle some of this horophobia or dismantle some of this stigma around a particular issue.
So I think one kind of key question I'll ask folks in that kind of like self-assessment stuff is, how are you benefiting from holding on to this ism or this stigma or this thing? How is it benefiting you to continue to reinforce horophobia within yourself, transphobia within yourself? And that the our ability to answer that question, if we can't answer that question, don't know that answer, that's the thing to first discover. Because it always benefits us when we engage in an ism, it is because it is benefiting us. Maybe it's proximity to the patriarchy, maybe it's proximity to wealth, to power, to access, to like safety. But it still means that we are deciding to other another person for our own self-protection. And so when we can start even just shake a little bit that idea of self-protection, like I've been thinking about like what does it mean to be a race traitor to white people right now? Like what does it mean for me to be like, those aren't my people? Like I'm not connected to like the deeply racist systems that white America is creating and is building and is perpetuating right now. And like, what does it mean for me to like, in the same way, like I'm dismantling, trying to dismantle mental health systems, how am I dismantling my relationship to my whiteness and like calling it out and like being in awareness of like my presence in a room with black people is going to be painful to them. Just me existing. And I went to the Sex Down South conference this weekend and it was this beautiful, fucking amazing. I would really encourage folks of color to go to this conference. I encourage white people not to go, actually, because I was, I sometimes was, I was a presence in the room and it was a gift. I felt really grateful to be there, but there was times where I'm like, this isn't for me. Like I am the cause of the pain that these folks are sitting through right now. They're doing a, beautiful spiritual sexual ritual around they were literally robbed of their sexual history and genealogy and education and story and family and lineage and education and, all of this, like their erotic history because of my people. And what does it mean to like hold that intensity without like being in a shame spiral? Stepping out of the shame instead is the like, can I hold this thing and this idea and think about how do I currently present, impact, engage with these communities to like offer to do things differently, to offer support, to be a, and maybe they don't want my support. Maybe they want not. My good friend Raquel, who actually is the other co-founder of ECC, she's often like, we just don't need white people at all. Like, we don't need y'all. And I appreciate her saying this to me and still working with me, but she's like, we actually finished ECC by why all the white people left the committee and the black women finished it because we were having some conflict and there was some shit that wasn't going well. And black women were like, y'all, like, you need to step out to make sure that we do this well. And that was a really big gift that Raquel gave me to like learn how to do that and to learn what it meant to be like, can I actually believe this will be better without me? And I still get to be a part of it, and it's a gift that I'm able to like still grow and build this thing.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of humility and just acceptance of the privilege that we have and the awareness that there's so many other ways that to do things and gifts that we all bring that are equal, that are truly equal and beautiful when we can appreciate the rainbow that we all are as one, not just one color of the rainbow. I have another question for you, and this is around sexual integrity. Because I feel like the reason that there is so much targeting and horophobia and all these things is because our sexuality has to be, in my opinion, and Heather and I created society and Taboo Talk specifically because we feel like sexuality is like the largest collective shadow right now. There is a lot of, there is a lot of opportunity in such something that is so powerful, something that is so healing. Something that is so predominant in the thing that we all share in common, which is sex and sexuality, that it has often been misused, abused, and really thwarted in really manipulative ways. And so I think because of that, a lot of people have a lot of fear and a lot of stigmatization. So I'm wondering, how do we really reclaim and do this sex work in a way that is in integrity, that is empowering, that is safe? And what would you tell people that both want to be sex workers to be in integrity? And just for anyone that's listening, that maybe hearing this perspective might shift the way that they view this field.
I mean, I think it all goes together, right? It's like you can't really do any kind of sexual labor, whether it's coaching or sex work or content, whatever. You can't really do that without doing your own work inside. Like we all have to be unpacking our own our own healing, our own shit. Even just sitting in sex therapy, like I have to be like one of the reasons why a lot of therapists really struggle with sexuality topics with clients is they don't know what to do with sexual transference and what to do with like sexual stuff that comes in. And this is a space that sex workers often do a really good job with. But when you say sexual integrity, I think there's, I think of the concept of being aligned with your values and boundaries as much as you can and learning what your own consent practice looks like, learning what your own, like that inner yes is of like, this feels good versus this feels no. And I give the caveat that a lot of sex workers who are in survival spaces don't have the privilege of listening to that because they still need to just like pay their rent. So I think it's both and. Like I had this conversation with a colleague recently around cuckolding. Do you know what cuckolding is, y'all? Okay. Basically that like I don't
But you
I
can share it. You can
or
share it
maybe
with people
yeah,
that
I
are
was gonna say if you
listening.
could define it.
Yeah.
Well, I'll give the very short explanation I give is I recommend that, if you're a sex worker who has choice and privilege, and if you can, choose your clients and your scenes, whether it's online or in person, that it's unethical to do cuckolding scenes. Like it is harmful to Black and Brown folks because it is basically repeating a pattern that was enacted on Black men in slavery, where they were forced to fuck. They were fucked by their owner, or they were forced to fuck their mothers or other people in their community as a subjugation, as a power move by white men. And so the cuckolding scene where a white man is sitting back and watching a bull, usually Black or brown person, fuck their wife is not a submissive white man, being humiliated. It is still a white man oppressing and using and subverting this Black or brown man and seeing them as a breeder, a stud, a tool not empowered in their own emotions and their own experiences, just sort of used for their genital performance. And so like anybody, if you're a person doing sex work, if you're doing scenes that involve race play, like how the fuck are you showing up in your own work around that? And what does that look like? And how do you set boundaries around that? Just as an example of when you say integrity, I don't, those are scenes I will always say no to. Are there other ways that like, I'm not going to like repeat transphobic things, but then you can, call me lots of names in a scene with me that I agree to and I consent to. So like, it's not that I don't do any degradation or humiliation play or edge play. It's that I have my own values around what do those barriers look like. And mostly it's around no harm to other people or other identities.
I'm really hearing it's kind of like number one, doing your own inner work so you can show up as your most integrated, authentic self. And from that place, as much as you can, of course, it's different if you're in like a flight or fight place in your life, but as much as you can, like really choosing to do work that's in alignment. Yeah, that's consensual and in alignment and clearly communicated to make sure that it feels good for you. Yeah, that's beautiful. Well, we're going to continue this conversation, Soleil. But we're just going to take one more short break. So everyone, stay tuned and we'll be right back. Hey, hot stuff. We're going to take a quick pause from the show just because I'm so excited to tell you guys about one of the most transformative online tools that I've used that has really unlocked my pleasure journey to the next level. And that is the OMGS course. So until this last year, I actually struggled to orgasm on my own without the help of a toy. I felt dependent, I felt hopeless, and I honestly felt like there was something wrong with me. But within just 2 weeks of starting this course, I had my first orgasm from my own touch, and I was like, hallelujah, I'm not broken.
And it's just opened up so much since then. I can honestly say it's just gotten better and wetter from there. So OMG Yes Course is a fun, user-friendly course packed with all sorts of different videos and techniques and showcases a myriad of different women. And it will completely shift the way that you experience pleasure. So whether you're struggling with orgasms or maybe you just want to amplify your pleasure, both solo and with a partner, this course is truly a game changer. You can use the link in our show notes below to unlock your orgiastic potential and also to support the expansion of the Cis Society movement. Now back to your show.
Welcome back, everybody, to Taboo Talks. And we are here with the lovely Soleil, and we have been going deep, deep into sex work, therapy, and everything in between, and advocating for its workers and why it matters, not just to sex workers, but to everybody, why this is a human issue. And with this being the last segment, Soleil, I wanted to give you the opportunity, we touched briefly on it earlier, to talk more about what you founded, the Equitable Care Certification. So yeah, please, anything that you can share about that, we want to know.
Yes, and thank you for having me and having this opportunity. So ECC, the Equitable Care Certification, it's equitablecarecertification.com, and it is Equitable Care Certification on all of the socials. We are a 36-hour CE program for therapists, coaches, healers. Anybody can take it that is in a related, if you work with humans, you can take the certification. We have sliding scale and scholarships. So we really want anybody and everybody who wants to work with sex workers to be welcome and available to be a part of it. It's over the course of 12 weeks, we do 3-hour courses, and you know, it's a really beautiful experience because we have built in somatic exercises, built in group experiences, built in self-reflection, videos from sex workers telling their stories, accountability and conversations about our own personal edges. We provide supervision for those who go through the live cohort to receive a sex work client from our network. And then we provide supervision to support you in working with that client and get ongoing support after. And we have an alumni network and a provider network. So if you're a sex worker watching, go to our website and look at our provider network. We have lots of great providers that people we have trained, more than 100 and over 100 therapists we've trained so far in the last 2 years. Go and look at our network. We have lots of great humans that could be a good provider for you. And they do not end up on our website unless we vet them and we believe that they're going to do good work. So we're very picky about who completes this work. I'm really proud of it and grateful for the team, Raquel and Mel, who helped, you know, bring it to completion. Thank you for that.
Full body chills. Thank you so much for the work that you do on this planet. It's really touching and moving and inspiring, and it's fucking changing the world.
Thank you.
It really is. It's changing the world and it's making a difference in so many people's lives. Gratitude. That's what I'm feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're so inspiring. Such an inspiring woman on all fronts. I mean, like, these are just two of the aspects that we've touched on, and I know that you do so much more than this too. My question for you as we wrap is, for anyone listening who wants to go into sex work themselves or is already dabbling in it, how can they prepare, and what advice do you have for them to be both safe and successful in the field?
Yeah. So, I mean, for those in sex work spaces, number one most important thing is build community. Find local community, find anybody and everybody. And it doesn't matter what kind of work they're in. Anybody local to you is going to be your people when shit goes down. Finding online communities, getting in support groups, getting in, you know, sex work affirming therapy. As we've talked about, because of horophobia, the stigma and an impact of horophobia in your life is really devastating sometimes for a lot of people. The need to hide, the need to subvert, fear on losing families and children and well-being. So, you know, doing all of the, if you can, do a lot of that, like, labor first to build your own safety network, to build your own, you know, systems in place so that you're, if you can avoid being face out, like not having your face online, it can be helpful. If you can avoid, you know, being really clear about who knows what, using, you know, having burner phones, using VPNs, using end-to-end encryption, being really careful, you know, proton mail, using different systems that, like, will help you stay safe digitally as well as, you know, in your community. Almost every sex worker I know has either been doxxed or been harmed or outed by somebody in their real life. So it's a real and likely problem. So I think just doing all the personal work you need to like know how will you relate to people knowing this thing about you, and how will you honor other sex workers in your ownership of that this being valid and okay work to be doing and good for the world. Sex workers are healers, are they're historically the midwives, the witches, the healers of our communities, and we've lost the connection to the protection of them as, the goddesses, priestesses that they are, and we really continue to be those things in the world, and we need others who want to do that, but know there's risks involved and you're valuable and cared for.
And you think all this, like using encrypted mail, email, and all these types of things, burner phones, is really for people that just want to do in-person work, and like full service, or is this for like even just doing cam work?
Everybody, yeah, literally everybody. Because right now, like online, people are really vicious, and with AI, they can find anybody. They can get all
Wow.
of your data so fast. So, just being super, super careful, especially if you're trying to keep it hidden, being super, super careful. And one of the unfortunate things, if you do any content work, if you put videos out there ever, they will be duplicated and copied and reposted millions of times. So it's pretty impossible to do camming or any kind of content work and not have it be out there. You cannot control the spread once you put anything out there in the world. And this could be the same with even just sexting and sending photos. So I think just being really careful about, yeah, how you use your image, what it means to you. And deep fakes are real too right now, which really sucks because AI is being misused versus being the tool that it could be. So I think just being more open to, like, if someone makes a deep fake of you, or if someone tries to share your content with places you don't want it to be shared, it's like you're a beautiful, empowered sexual being, and there's nothing wrong with having earned labor, earned money by being an erotic being. And so it's just undoing that internalized fear, shame shit that like it was a bad or wrong thing. Another reason to not make content that you're not ethically aligned with, though, because if your content that's not ethically aligned gets out there, even worse for your other identities.
Yeah, really, like that's where it comes from. It's like the more in alignment with that you are with your values, and you're creating an integrity, and you're accepting, and you're less, and you're just accepting of yourself being in this like holy whore archetype. Then even if it gets out there, you're like, well, whatever, this is who I am. I
That's
think
my
there's been
voice.
a lot of people that a lot of sex workers that have fragmented themselves have had other careers or family or communities where it's like, well, this is my public persona, but this is my private persona. And I think sex workers are really being asked, at least I feel like I'm being asked to just bring all of me to the table. Like, this
Yeah.
is who I am, and I can be a good coach. I can be a better coach because I do this work, and like they help each other inherently. So yeah,
Totally.
just like bringing all of ourselves to the table. Well, thank you so much. Is there anything else that you want to share with the listeners of anything exciting that you're working on currently, or how they can get in touch with you?
Yeah, some future workshops for ECC. We're working on a kink for trauma series. So we just did a recent class, and we're doing a lot more like how to use BDSM as a trauma intervention tool, targeting more towards BDSM in community spaces and BDSM in your personal life, not in a therapeutic space. And then we're doing an anti-mandatory reporting course that we're working on, but we're doing a teaser this next month for folks this month actually for folks who want to learn a little bit about the harms of mandatory reporting and what are the alternatives, as well as a course on abuse patterns and how do we identify abuse in our communities. So yeah, attend our workshops. We would love registrations for our full course. It's a really beautiful and amazing course and gives you a built-in community of other folks doing anti-oppressive work. And so, yeah, you can follow us, equitablecarecertification.com. And then I am at Cyborg Dreams with a Z to follow my weird, sexy art stuff that I make. Yeah, thanks for having me, y'all. I'm really grateful to be here and be in this conversation.
Absolutely. Been such a pleasure. I feel like
Awesome.
this be an infinite unfolding, unraveling conversation. There's so much here to unpack. Thank you so much for joining us. We want to allow you, invite you to share one sound to describe how you feel after this conversation.
Yes.
Yay!
Happy to be here.
Yes!
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning into Taboo Talks, where some truths need to be spoken and some silences need to be broken.
Each week, we come together with diverse minds to explore and integrate the dance between shadow and light. Join our community and stay connected to all of the exciting movements of our mission through our website at cissociety.world, where you can sign up for our email list. This is the best way to stay updated on new taboo topics, episodes of our podcast, and even find live events near you. On our website, you'll also find links to follow our podcast, Taboo Talks, on platforms like Spotify, YouTube, and Apple. For those who want to dive even deeper, you can join our private WhatsApp community to engage in meaningful discussions about taboo topics with members from all over the world. So don't miss a moment. Visit cissociety.world and share these conversations to support the expansion of our mission. Together, we can spark the change the world needs. Until next time, stay curious, stay open, and remember, the only thing taboo is not talking about it.